Hello and welcome to Relatable with the Experts. This is your host, Teresa Freeman. Our focus in this third series is on accountability and success. I'm excited for all of you to hear our experts' point of view on this topic. Each has a unique perspective and a hot take for us to consider. As a reminder, our experts for this series include Lennis Moynihan, licensed clinical professional counselor, Karen Schaefer, executive, former CIA and board advisor, Vivian Dixon, talent acquisition executive, and LaQuenta Jacobs, HR executive and diversity expert. In this episode, expert Karen Schaefer returns, and we dive into the powerful connection between accountability and success. As always, Karen breaks things down in a way that's not only easy to understand, but also truly inspiring. You'll find yourself reflecting, gaining fresh insight, and maybe even making a few mindset shifts. There are plenty of aha moments in this one, so settle in and enjoy this episode. Alrighty, so we're back with Karen. Thank you so much for joining me. And this is our third segment in our series. So sadly, the last for this year, but we're talking about accountability and success. And the reason that I think this one is so important is in a lot of the work that I do with clients around workshops and leadership development and employee development, this has come up so much as an area of interest to help develop our professionals around this concept of accountability and how it has a direct correlation to success. And I think accountability can sometimes have like a, I don't know. There's something about that word that, I feel like sometimes people feel is, has a negative connotation, or there's something like parent child. I don't know, but what I'm hearing in my clients and some of their, like with the virtual kind of hybrid environment, it's been difficult. And this idea of like personal accountability. And I hate to do the stereotypical, like talk about generational differences, but I'm going to do that here for just a minute because I've seen it. I mean, in my own life and I think even my parents would have said that we had a hard time being accountable. So I think it's something that's over time that has evolved in terms of what it is and what it isn't. But I think like, there was a lot of need for me early in my career to be accountable and to show that over and over again before I was given other things to do. And then I find that now it just is, it comes up all the time. So I thought, well, why not at least have different conversations with people and see if we can kind of crack the code, because I don't think one is right and one is wrong. So I know there's a big lead in, but I am curious as you think about it, from your perspective, what are some of the things that come to you through your lens around accountability and success?
Sure. So first of all, I have to say this is of all of the modules we've done, probably I think the most important. They're all important, but I think you absolutely hit it on the head that we have to stop, or we have to rewire our brains to understand or to think about accountability differently, because I do think it's essential for our success. And I think it's essential for success at every single level. So I'll start. First, I'm going to share a little anecdote, because I was thinking through this conversation this weekend, and I had mentioned to you off camera that that I had an experience with my son. So he is 10 years old, 10-year-old boy. And he absolutely knows everything, can do everything right, doesn't need anybody to tell him anything. So he was on the soccer field, and I coach his soccer team. And he was standing in the field yelling at another one of his players, his teammates, like, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you didn't do that. So he comes off the field, and he's huffing and puffing. And as one of the coaches, I said, you come with me right now. I pulled him off, you know, off the bench, walked down. So we had a private conversation, and I said, you need to stop right now. Number one, you're not the coach. So you are not in a position to tell anybody else what they should be doing right or wrong. I said, number two, let's talk about you and what you're doing on the field. I said, you are accountable for your own actions on that field. You start there. And once you can step off the field and tell me that you did nothing wrong while you were on that field, then maybe you can talk to your teammates. I said, but even then, you are not allowed to talk to your teammates unless it's constructive feedback that helps them be better players and not which shames or makes them feel badly about themselves. And I realized this is why accountability is so important. Like if you don't have, you can't function. And I mean, I know that sounds like a trite example, but it's a life lesson. If you don't start with your own personal accountability, which is why, even though I think there should be accountability at every single level, I will just start by saying that it is imperative at a senior leadership level. You cannot be successful. You cannot be successful as a leader, even if you can drive certain results. You cannot consider yourself successful if you do not keep, you know, maintain accountability to your team. And what was interesting is, as I thought about that, I was like, okay, thinking about our conversation, what does that mean? So as a senior leader, what does it mean to me to be accountable to my team, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and the first thing is to show up, right? To be there, all like present, and be someone who is available to them operationally, personally, and professionally as they're developing their careers. So I, as I thought about it, you know, and I would like to think, you know, that I got better in every iteration of my career as I progressed up the chain. But I am very clear that I did not possess the accountability at all levels the way that I wish that I could. You know, I'd love to be able to say to you, oh, from my time as a first line supervisor, I was already doing, but you know, what does it mean to me? Yeah. First and foremost, that you're providing your employees, your subordinates, you know, all of the mentoring, tools, resources, career development, and training so that they can succeed individually and as a team. If you're not providing them those basic tools that are necessary to execute the job, then you are not being accountable to your people because you're expecting results from them without giving them the proper tools to execute whatever result you're seeking to accomplish. The other thing is you have to set very, I would say number two would be setting very clear expectations for performance. You know, part of the accountability problem in my mind is self-inflicted because I think sometimes we want our employees to be accountable for their performance, yet we have not made it clear to them what our expectations are of them. So if I go to an employee and say, hey, you know, it's like when you give a performance evaluation once a year and you haven't been providing them feedback throughout the year. This is why I'm such a big believer in not just the annual feedback that you, right, but regular check-ins like, hey, here's what I think you're doing really well. I think here's areas where I really need to see you grow. And this is, you know, and again, being accountable to your people means not just pointing out where their areas for growth are, but if you're saying to someone, hey, you're not, you know, you are not demonstrating the leadership skills that I need for you, for the folks you're managing, and then you don't offer them the opportunity to step away, for example, and take leadership training, that is not being accountable to your people. That is, again, setting expectations for them that you have not allowed them the opportunities to, you know, execute to the level that you expect. So I think giving them those clear expectations for performance allow, and then the follow-up support that enables that performance allows you, not only that means you're being accountable to your people, but also allows you to hold them accountable for what your expectations are for them. So it cuts both ways, right? And then I think, you know, we've talked a lot about this in other sections, other modules where we've chatted, but, you know, you have to have developed with the accountability piece, you have to have developed some measure of trust through this process where they will hear and receive your feedback in a way that they can process it and act on it. And that can only be done, I think, through consistent accountability on your part as a leader. Like, you show up, you demonstrate that you're interested, you give them the resources they need to execute, and then you also give them the training or support or whatever it is required for them to build out and build on their shortcomings. And that is, you know, something where we're very good at holding other people accountable. But then if you step back a little bit, okay, I'm holding you as my subordinate and accountable, but yet am I holding myself to that same level of accountability? Have I done everything I need to do for you as my subordinate so that you could meet the objectives that I've set for you? And if not, that's where you're going to have a trust deficit.
I think what, as you're talking, and this comes up a lot, but I think it's really accountability and investment to me are almost have to happen in parallel. Investment,
yes.
The investment of a leader. You said something that really, it struck me, and I think I'm guilty of this too. I think just because I told you, just because you and I had the, you know, I had the courage to give you the feedback. So that as a leader, I'm like, okay, I'm done. I gave her the feedback. She knows now what she needs to do. And then I move on. So your point about, yes, have the feedback and then what's next?
Right.
And I think that we only, when we get to performance improvement plans, that's when we get very granular and specific with people. But I think there's a lot of room between initial feedback and getting to a plan. And so is there somewhere in between there in terms of investment of how you're showing up? And then on the employee side, you also have to invest. You have to invest in the relationship with your leader. You have to invest in recognizing where the areas that maybe you struggle and ask mm-hmm. for those boundaries in a way. Like, hey, I get attention deficit. I get really distracted. You know, mm-hmm. let's put me in a room. You know, you kind of have to ask for things too if you're someone that's struggling, I feel like.
Right. Yes, I agree. And I remember my father told me this. I'm a legacy. So one of the first things he said to me, you know, is, well, two pieces of advice he gave me. Number one was always be a deputy before you're a chief, which was very good advice.
Yeah.
And then secondly, it was always treat people fairly, but differently. And this seems like it doesn't seem intuitive to us immediately you think, well, no, you have to treat everyone the same way.
Same.
But you can't. As a leader, exactly to the point that you just made, you need to know enough about your people to, and I'm not saying you have, you know, because then this becomes all about the people and not anything about the mission. And it can seem really overwhelming. But I think what I have found is if you plan for it, if you have check-in sessions, you know, it's like pay it up front. So you're not paying it.
Yes.
You know, quite, it's so much more on the back end. Right. And every person responds differently. I had a team. And what I would always say after our operational meetings is, hey, we would have a session where we'd do catch up every week. And I'd say, hey, do you have everything you need? That was my last question every time in our meetings. Do you have everything you need to accomplish? You know, what do you need from me? Because I'm not doing your job, right? So where can I help you? Of all the things you've just briefed me on that you're working on, and then I would have a do out list where I would say, okay, I'm accountable to this person. They have asked me to push this idea forward to the front office to get approval or to explain why this needs to be re-ranked as a priority in the budget, you know, whatever it is, whatever the ask is. But if you don't specifically say, what else do you need from me? People are not necessarily even going to think to ask you.
Right.
And I would literally go in with my boss, because I was the chief of operations in this particular position. And I would go into my boss, who was the chief of the directorate. And I'd say, okay, hey, can I run through these things with you? Is it okay if I do this, 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 and this? And, you know, it ends up, I found it an amazingly effective tool and such a simple tool to make sure that they felt like I knew that I was accountable to them and I was prepared to invest in them and put some skin in the game so that what they were working on could be accomplished, got the attention it needed so that they could be successful. The other thing.
Whether you're a recent college grad entering the workforce or a seasoned executive navigating a transition, I'm here to help. I'm Coach T, and I specialize in helping you land the job, lead with impact, and love what you do. Let's get to work. Visit tfasoftskills.com to learn more. Now back to the show.
That I think is really, really important about accountability and leadership is, and we talked about this a little bit in a module on living with fear, without fear, right? Which I actually don't believe is possible, but our former deputy director, I was his EA, and he used to say to me, you know, Karen, I can find 100 people who are willing to risk their lives for God and country. I can't find 5 that are willing to risk their careers. And here's what I would say. I think, and it's such an interesting, instructive observation. And I think it's true in almost every space that people are not always willing to take the hit. And I think that in addition to being present and being there for your people, the single most important way that you are there for your people is that you are that buffer. You take the hit. Whether it's a mistake that someone on your team, one of your subordinates made or not, it is your mistake. And you learn to absorb those blows. And what this does, and I've lived this because, you know, we're very good at taking the praise. We're very good as leaders to say, yeah, awesome. We just did this. This operation was amazing. And we took down so-and-so and so-and-so. We are not quite so good at saying, I sucked. It is my fault. But I have to say it is probably to be a really good leader, you need to recognize that you did something wrong. And that I think is most senior leaders. And I will acknowledge this 100% that as a younger leader moving up the chain, I was not always accountable to my people the way that I should have been. And I didn't absorb as much of the body blows as I probably should have. But I do think that I learned. I learned from good role models who, you know, I was carjacked when I was on my first tour in the highest threat post in the world. And they broke my window, stole my purse, made off with, you know, some equipment. And I was terrified. I came back. I was a first tour officer. I thought I was going to be fired. And I remember my chief of station sat down and he said, are you okay? Are you all right? Why are you here? You need to go home. You know, just collect yourself. And I said, no, I have to write an incident report. I have to do this. I have to do that. And he said, no, you need to go home, take a shower, get some sleep, come back in the morning and, you know, write the cable to headquarters. We'll figure this out. We will work through this. And, you know, I was not pulled. And it was probably one of my best teaching moments from leadership in terms of what good leadership looks like. Because, you know, he basically took the blow. He's like, hey, we're in a high risk environment. This is what happens when we're out there all the time. These are the rules, you know, these are the risks that we inherently take every time we step out of the embassy. And, you know, he was that buffer for me. And he didn't have to be. He could have just let me submit my cable and not weighed in. You know, he was very good about weighing in the cable, providing context to the situation and, you know, saying she should stay. This is, and, you know, that could have potentially been career ending for me. So I think, you know, again, stepping up in those moments when it's going to matter the most to the people that work for you, it's unfortunately doesn't manifest itself as often as it should.
Yeah. And it's something that you're saying is sort of tripping a thought around the cancel culture now and how people making mistakes. I think there's some confusion.
Yes.
I think there's confusion about what it's really like. And in terms of within a successful organization, within a, you know, a healthy culture, that making mistakes and people talk about it a lot. Yeah. If it's through failures that you learn and make a mistake, but I really believe that it's getting harder and harder because people are, you know, it's being surfaced and then held against you.
Oh.
And I think it's happening everywhere. It's like culturally and socially, but then it's happening internally in organizations. And so this idea of like, if I'm accountable, if I'm left holding the bag, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
So then why does anybody want to be accountable? Because then it somehow ends up being from reputation or, you know, so I think we have to do something about that. Like we have to change the, maybe not here, but yeah. You know, there's just something as you're talking, it's like, that's part of this too, where people, I think, you know, the chance that he took on you or you even being accountable, saying, I got to write that report. There's something about that that was very nurturing and like let you have some space to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know. It's getting harder and harder.
It is. And to your point, there was a quote that I was listening to this podcast and I loved the quote. It was, everything these days is permissible, but nothing is forgivable. Yes. And it goes to your point that, you know, like it just, we have to find a better way to work through failure so that it really does mean that you can move past a mistake and not just for a few lucky people who can rebrand themselves and keep going.
Right.
That's the infinitesimal 0.01% of the population. The rest of us feel like we carry, especially, I mean, think about this, Teresa, especially for this generation. Think about how many times you have reinvented yourself as a young woman. I think about the person I was in elementary school, junior high, high school, and I did not have this running track that recorded every success and the successes are great, but every misstep, every failure, every shortcoming, and it's documented. And it's like, how do these young people learn that lesson, to your point, that failure can be a good thing? Because they're not being taught that it's a good thing. And cancel culture in particular, even though we pay lip service to the failure piece, yes. Again, and this is where I would say, at least in our world, where we have to encourage risk, you know, in my, you know, coming from the operational role, again, this is part of the accountability of that leadership, right? As a leader, I had to encourage people, knowing that most of what we do is risky, a lot of it ends up in failure, and that's part of the process. And what we really need to focus, it's like being, you know, that's why, you know, this tech generation, fail fast, right? Fail forward, just keep moving. We have to learn, to your point, to be able to do that across the board and to be able to really, I agree with you. We need to move past this cancel culture where people are forever haunted by, you know, one thing that they might have missed. And it's not even just young people. You do something silly and you've put it on your
right,
you know, your feed, and you don't get hired for your first job. But now it's also like, God forbid, in the 30,000 interviews that someone has, they make one misstep, they say one thing that's viewed as inappropriate by someone and they don't even realize they've said it. And then that cancel culture is ready to pounce without ever, you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt. And so I think part of that, you know, part of that obligation and that accountability for you as a senior leader is to create an environment where people are allowed to fail and knowing and acknowledging when you fail, right? There can't be daylight between the way in which you hold yourself accountable and the way in which you hold your employees accountable. It's got to look like the same thing to them.
I've told this story once before on here when I was interviewing an old boss of mine, and the thing about her, it was a huge mistake. And we kind of worked through the mistake in terms of like, and it was a high stakes thing. And then later, I just felt like whenever I had to interact with her, the mistake was hanging. Like I couldn't, the cancel, it was our version of cancel. And I finally, I don't know what came over me, but I finally had the courage to ask her. I said, I feel like this thing is hanging over me and I can't work beyond it. And it was my recording and my story, and she had moved on. But it took such courage.
The soundtrack you replay in your head. Yes.
Because I felt so bad about the mistake and I couldn't get over it myself. So then it was like, once I said the words out loud to her, that was so scary for me. Like we talked about fear in the other episode. It's kind of like you, the accountability is so closely aligned, I think, because once I held myself accountable to what I was feeling and thinking, and I shared that, it just changed everything. I mean, it really was one of
And
those.
you can move on. And I do think that's interesting because I would agree with that. And I would say that's part of that challenge, right? Is this is where your personal accountability, like when I was teaching my son on the soccer field, like, hey, you don't square yourself away, I'm benching you, is what I told him. But it's true of your employee. Like, yes, there is a level of accountability your leadership has, but let me tell you right now, if I have an employee who does not own their mistake, that's a lot harder for me to step in and play the buffer
But
than
yes.
if they hold them. Like if I have someone who comes to me and says, hey, this is what happened. I really screwed up. I'm so sorry. And I'm going to work on this, this, and this, or, you know, this is how I plan to try and address it. As it's human nature, I'm happy to be your support. I am happy to serve as a buffer for you. I am happy to protect this relationship. I am going to be much more inclined to do that if you've been forthcoming with me, right? That you've held yourself accountable. And so I do think, and in the context of the cancel culture, I think the people who have fared the best, frankly, are the people that hold themselves accountable, who say, hey, mea culpa, we are all human. But in this case, I really screwed up. I really was off the mark. It doesn't matter that I didn't understand that I was off the mark. Here's what I've learned, and here's what I'm going to do to be more sensitive to this going forward. Those people tend to be the ones who own it and own it, not just privately, but own it, you know, especially if we're all living out loud like we are these days, you kind of have to, right? So you're exactly right. I think, you know, maybe that's part of the antidote to cancel culture. I still think we're way too quick to, you know, and this actually, the cancel culture is an interesting thing too, because I would say, were we really serious about holding ourselves accountable? You know, it's that whole don't throw rocks at glass houses, right? You know, I mean, that if we were really honest with ourselves about all the ways in which we're not accountable, we'd be a lot like, you know, it's like take care of this space first, right? And so I would say, you know, even in the context of teams, really high functioning teams are people who all take accountability and support one another, right? They're all like, this is my lane. I'm supposed to be doing this. And then when I don't, I turn to my peer, my colleague, and I say, hey, I really screwed this up. And then again, your colleague's going to acknowledge and say, oh, I might be frustrated, but let me jump in and help you. And this is how you do it better the next time, right? Whereas if you say, wasn't me, and everybody, I mean, 9 times out of 10, everybody knows who it was, right? So it's like you're not fooling anybody. People know, and they just want to know that you're accountable and that, you know, and it's not just in word, but in deed, right? Because that's the other thing. People will say, ah, mea culpa, or gosh, I'm really sorry about this. But then they don't take the steps required to demonstrate whether it's training on something, whether it's follow through or picking up, you know, you know, cleaning up the mess that they've made. They don't follow through in their actions. So, you know, it has to be accountability in word and deed.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the other component to this is in terms of your own idea of accountability and then checking in against it. It's almost like there's an added element of communication here around there's room for us to assume a lot of things because you've told me how to do a thing and now I'm accountable to that thing and I did a thing, but did I tell you I did the thing? Do I have questions about the thing?
Interesting.
Then there's like the performance of the thing.
Right.
And so there's a whole thing of communication that I think runs through this, and highly performing teams are teams that, to your point, trust and communicate well. And again, I think this is in our hybrid virtual world. People are busy. I just found out my husband has something like 15 direct reports. I'm like, you can't. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, now maybe if, you know, you could maybe say like if everybody's doing the exact same thing from a, you know, technical person, but even then, 15 different people with 15 different needs, like everything we're talking about, there's no way
he can do it well.
The kind of dedicated leader right. that we're suggesting. So there's
you can't show up. Yeah, you can't show
so,
up.
So then it's like, well, okay, well, if that's the reality, like then what's the like, you know, show up, like, what is it? Like the Cliff Notes, you know, there's gotta be ways and there are, you know, to do it efficiently. But I do think communication is another component to this. As you're talking, we're kind of working this out.
Yeah.
That you really, both parties, whether you're an individual contributor and it's with leadership or vice versa, there's a communication that has to happen. Want to grow your career the smart way and avoid the mistakes I learned the hard way? My book, Soft Skills I Learned the Hard Way, is packed with real talk, ready-to-use tips, and funny, relatable stories that make it easy to read for busy professionals. Whether you're just starting out or leading a team, this book's got something for you. Grab a copy at tfasoftskills.com. Now back to the show.
I agree. And you know, we assume, I think to your point, we assume that everybody agrees on the definitions of accountability and success. And it might be the case, and probably is the case, that in both instances, you have to spell out what it means to be accountable and what it looks like to you as a leader and what your so you're right. I mean, it's funny. I never thought about that. I would tend to focus on, you know, hey, accountability is achieving these outcomes. And it's interesting because, I don't think I ever dedicated the time and space that you're talking about that you need to, how do you execute and how do you keep people apprised and how do you communicate additional requirements or additional needs for resources or failures, you know, like what does that look like? And I mean, I think I had meetings and I would say, what else do you need from me? But I don't think intrinsically I ever laid out, you know, just at a fundamental, very basic level, these are my expectations. This is what I think success looks like.
Yes.
And here's how you communicate between those two with me.
Right.
That's interesting.
Someone was telling me and I was like, you know, and honestly, I mean, I kind of half did it, but because I'm so small, but you know, what are your rules of operations? Like, what are you... like a quality expectation. What is that expectation? What are the five things? And every leader, whether it's one person or you have 10 people or whatever it is, but people should know that if I work for Karen, these are the five things that Karen generally expects. And we, you know, you get the water cooler talk of like, oh God, like when you were going
to this way,
right? When you were like, you're going to be the first woman there. Like there's intel that gets shared in terms of how people are, but it is very interesting for the people that I think that I've worked for that did a good job of that, where you knew generally the lane. And that's because that person was very good at articulating it and setting the boundaries and probably holding you accountable to those five things.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right, because the process can sometimes matter as much.
And it's not innate. It's not always innate.
No, it's not. I mean, listen, I consider myself a successful leader. And yet so we're having this conversation. I'm like, huh, I don't know. Maybe I did sort of, to your point, maybe I did lay out sort of informally, but I didn't have sort of a, hey, this is how I would like you to do this. And also I think that can be a little tricky. You have to be careful in terms of a roadmap, what that looks like, because, you know, I think you can very quickly get into micromanagement.
Correct.
So I think, I think it's an interesting thing to think about and figure out how do you ensure that you get what you need without overly taxing. It's a given, it's got to be a bit of a give and take, right?
Yeah. Guardrails.
It can't just be the outcome. It's like you can't, an employee shouldn't expect that you just give them what they need up front and then sit back and wait for the outcome, right? I mean, there should be some expectations. So finding that appropriate balance of oversight and, to your point, agreeing on a cadence and a battle rhythm for, do you have what you, him or her, my employee asks, do you have what you need? Do you, and my asking them, like making sure that's cutting both ways.
Yeah. And that's where you said before, a lot of the coaching I do with leaders and frankly with people that are in transitional periods, the power of open-ended question to your point around questions are so powerful. And so when you say, do you have everything you need? Or you say, what is it that you need in order to have this in good shape by next Friday?
Uh-huh.
Right. So those are two very different questions.
Yes.
What do you need from me? Is there anything getting in your way that's going to prevent you from doing this by next Wednesday? See, I think sometimes we don't, that specificity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, they'll just know to do it.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right. Yeah. You need to prompt. You have to prompt them. And then I think you're right. I think because sometimes I think also understandably, they want to show that they can work independently.
Yes.
That they can succeed without you having to be part of their, project every day. But they also should know that you're not so busy that you aren't willing to weigh in strategically where it makes sense, not to run their project for them, but to, again, champion for the resources, champion for more people, champion for more money, whatever it is that specifically as a leader you can accomplish in probably a much more efficient way than they can. I mean, they could probably do it and trudge through things, but you're obviously going to have more WASTA as a senior leader to be able to step in and say, this is something that's important. This does require more people, money, whatever. So I think if we
kind of wrap this up, there's a lot that we've talked about, I think, on both sides of sort of the leader table and the professional sort of lane. And I do think the cancel culture interestingly shifts things a little bit. So there's a couple of things that I'd like to leave people thinking about. Like one, how are you holding yourself accountable?
Right.
Do you have a friend, ask a friend or talk to your leader, because I think that's a good way to just, engage in a conversation with someone and see if there's different answers there. On both sides, whether you're a leader, because I loved what you said, you can't just be like, I'm holding everyone else accountable. It's like, what about your own things that you need to be, your side of the street. And then I think we have proven, hopefully, that there is this direct correlation between accountability and success, whether it's personal or as a group or, in terms of being able to meet outcomes. There is a definite thread that kind of pulls through. What else from your perspective that we, maybe didn't hit in terms of that connection or anything else that are like sort of best practices?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and we talked about this before, but this is not, you're not in an isolated bubble, right? Yes. And so I think certainly holding yourself accountable I guess I would always say, and this is goes to my theory of leadership at every level, yeah. is that I think in the same way that I think no one should be more accountable than the most senior leader on a team, I would also argue that as someone who wants to be successful at every level, you should always hold yourself accountable first. Before you choose to start to engage others on where they have not done something or, you know, be very careful, especially if you're part of a team that has to be high functioning, you know, be very careful to sort of check yourself first. And I think there is a tendency, like my son did on the soccer field, to immediately find what everybody else was doing wrong yeah. rather than first check himself. It's yeah. a, you know, having that honest self-assessment to say, am I accountable? Have I made mistakes before you choose to just, you know, engage with peers or even, you know, leadership on things? Because while it's very tempting to blame others, it's really important. And I think, again, I think what people should take away from this is failure really is learning, but only if you take the right lessons from your failure, right? You account for it and you move forward and you say, okay, I might make other mistakes next time, but I'm not going to make the same one, right? So, yeah. Yeah. So you know, I'm going to find all new ways to screw up.
Exactly. So and say, my little last plug around communication, because it did spark sort of a, I think, a unique conversation with us around how is that happening for you too? Like, are you communicating those things proactively or reactively?
Right. Yes. Tip. Yes. I think so too. Proactive is a must.
Yes. Right?
Yes, it is.
I can't believe we're done, but this has been such a joy. Thank you for all of your time. You've really given me so much time. And I thoroughly enjoy our conversations. And I also feel like we were talking, I think, joking off camera, but I do think it's like we have so much love to share.
Yes.
You know, our experiences so far and being able to have an opportunity to talk about it, and hopefully people out there can benefit. So thank you very
Absolutely.
Much.
As I joked, right? Pay it forward, because I have so much material to draw from all my mistakes.
Me too.
I think, you know, this is what leadership is all about is, you know, and I think we create unrealistic expectations for young people if we aren't honest about that, if we just right. pretend like we were always good at what we did, you know,
yes.
and that we never struggled and that we never had anxiety, we never had fear, right?
Right.
I mean, we need to be kinder to the next generation so that they don't have the I think often that if I do have a regret, it's a lot of that unrealistic expectations that I had for myself and for others. And,
yeah.
and it was largely to my perception of the fact that failure and learning are not one and the same, right?
So yes.
Hopefully this next generation will be much smarter.
I know. I hope so too.
Than we were. Sure. Thanks, Teresa. Right. Always a pleasure to chat.
Yes, of course. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Relatable Experts. Your advice and counsel is so valuable. Thank you, Relatable audience. Please rate, subscribe, leave comments, and share this podcast with others. Until next time, this is Career Coach T. Stay connected.